The Citadel Cafe is proudly sponsored by TweakedAudio.com. For high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds, visit TweakedAudio.com and use our code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's TweakedAudio.com.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 105 for Wednesday, April 2nd, 2014. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I gather to talk about the geeky crap that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me this evening is Mr. Lou Page from Zombies Ate My Podcast and a host of other really cool crap on the internet. Lou, how's it going?
Very good. It's been a while.
It has been a while. We were just discussing in the lengthy pre-show when we were trying to troubleshoot why the hell the stream wasn't working. It turns out, once again, it's Skype. We established that you had not been on the show since December.
Yeah, I think it was late December or the 1st of January.
Very cool. Well, as always, it's good to have you back. And refresh everybody. We know that we do, Zombies Ate My Podcast, and that you guys do like a blow-by-blow of The Walking Dead, which just recently ended the season, did it not?
Yes, it did. We actually did our spoiler talk for the season finale last night, and that should be posted either tonight or first thing tomorrow morning.
Nice. So what else have you been up to online besides, lots of zombie
believe it or not, not a whole lot. A lot of my writing gigs dried up after the new year, so I haven't really been up to anything except work and podcasting. So
you should write some stuff for the Gamers Inn.
I should. I mean, I do have an account over there so that I can do that, because I used to, but I haven't had time.
Sure. I know that one of the things on their Patreon page is a redesign of the website that I've been helping them out with. And it's just, now Ryan and I are just taxed for the time to do it. So when the time is right, there will be an opportunity for, articles to be written and to be made forefront and shown to people.
I talk to Ryan almost every day. I should probably know this information.
I get on his case about self-promotion, too. It's like, no, you have to tell people this stuff. People just don't know. too funny. Well, I have some, housekeeping things to announce. This past Sunday, on March 30th, we've mentioned this a couple times before, but 54 Hours, the short film that Peyton has co-directed, premiered to a grand success in Newfoundland. I think there was about 300 people at the premiere at The Rooms, which is a historical venue in Newfoundland. So I just want to take this opportunity to say congratulations to my good friend Peyton on, I'm hoping a fantastic film. I haven't seen it yet personally because it's just been not available to me. It's doing its rounds right now. I'm sure I will, be able to get a screening from Peyton when he gets back in town. But it's been a lot of work for him over the last, year and a half or so. And I think it's a huge thing to be able to be a director on a film and put it out there and put a lot of your, heart and soul into it. If you're looking for more information on the film, you can check out last week's episode of the Citadel Cafe, where we have a lot of links to the film and to Peyton's work. You can find Peyton at Peyton Francis on Twitter. So if you have any questions about 54 Hours, you can shoot them at Peyton and he will direct you in the right place to see the film, learn about the film. There's some literature and other things in and around the film. So big congrats to Peyton. Yay.
Yeah, congrats to Peyton. I'm going to have to pester him. My wife has huge interest in his film. So.
Oh, cool. Good stuff. Yeah. Well, by all means, pass on the info. There's a poster we talked about last week that's out there. I don't remember the address off the top of my head, but it's got a lot of information on it. So, and one of the reasons that I've been so busy lately is that in March, I had a huge chunk of time where I was unavailable and we ended up missing an episode of the Citadel Cafe. And what I was doing was a 3-page comic spread for the Chronicle Herald, which is my local newspaper. And it was for the Nova Scotia Department of Agriculture. It is an education piece about biodiversity and farming in the province. And I'll post the work online after it's made its circulation today, because it was printed in today's paper. And it's pretty cool to see 2 and a half, almost 3 full pages of my comic work in the paper. I mean, and we're talking like 10 inches by 20 inches, just full of comics that I did for this feature. Yeah, it was written by Rick Hoag at the Department of Agriculture, along with some of his peers. It was kind of like a committee thing. And then I was my task to translate all of the information in the educational feature along with the story with some established characters that the Nova Scotia government has been using for education features into the comics. And it was my first real foray into this kind of a scale, you know, in terms of like the size of the newspaper and that kind of stuff. So it was a challenge for me, and it was something that, you know, I had to work really closely with Rick and some people at the Herald on. And so, yeah, it's out there today. I mean, if you happen to be listening locally, and there's still time to go grab a copy of the Chronicle Herald and take a look. If not, I will be able to share the images in my portfolio and online tomorrow. Because after that, there's just no other way to get a hold of it. Cause of course all the papers get recycled and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's the news for me. As far as the show is concerned, it is once again winter time, or rather winter is coming time. As of this Sunday, Game of Thrones season 4 descends upon us all. That's April 6th on HBO. And if you're new to the Citadel Cafe, every year when the Game of Thrones series is playing, we turn our movies, TV, and video section into a giant spoiler zone for that week's episode. So our Winter is Coming segment is going to be returning on Wednesday, April 9th. If you have not seen the previous seasons or have not seen that week's episode, you will be solely disappointed in the conversation on the Citadel Cafe. So we give a heads up on every episode, but this is just going to be another FYI, is that we are going to be spoiling Game of Thrones one episode at a time this year. It's always a lot of fun. I encourage everybody to catch up on the show if you're not already and watch it as soon as you can, or at least before you download the episodes, because we have a really, really good time. And lately, because I've been having a lot of rotating guests on the show, it'll be pretty cool to have, you know, a cycle of people, of different people with different opinions about the franchise on the Citadel Cafe. So that's coming up on April 9th. We are returning with our Winter is Coming segment for 2014. So I'm stoked because I cannot wait to see this season. Lou, are you you're all caught up on Game of Thrones, yes?
I am, but I do need to refresh on the season finale because feels like it's been forever.
Yeah. Well, it's been a whole year, I guess. Maybe a year and change. Or the reverse of that, the less than a year, like, you know, 10 months or so.
Yeah, I think it has been about 10 months.
Yeah. So, Jocelyn and I normally rewatch the season previous to when we start the new one, but we just haven't had time. We've been spending too much time watching Star Wars stuff.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of that on Netflix lately.
Oh my gosh, it's everywhere. So that's it for me for the housekeeping. And I mean, since we're talking Star Wars, we might as well just jump right into what we're watching. And for me, obviously, we're still watching Clone Wars, but there's been some other Star Wars stuff kind of interjected. But Lou, I'm gonna let you lead us off. Like, what cool stuff have you been watching over the last little while?
Well, I recently discovered I don't think it's in Canada, so I apologize. I recently discovered a service called HitBliss.
Okay.
And it's sort of like an Amazon Netflix thing, except you watch commercials and you earn money, and then you use the money to buy episodes of shows or rent movies.
That's an interesting model.
And they recently let you do it with some Netflix programming. And there's a show that came out a couple years ago called Perception. It stars Eric McCormick from Will and Grace.
Okay.
And it's a show that someone who knows me told me I would really like and was like, oh, yeah, yeah. But I've been unable to find it without buying an actual episode of the show because I'm a cord cutter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not on anything. And HitBliss has made it so that I could watch episodes of it. And I bought the entire first season on Amazon for free, basically. I watched a couple commercials and an episode, $1.99. I earned $2 and I'd buy an episode. Earn $2, buy an episode.
Oh, wow. So how many commercials did you have to watch to earn enough money to buy the episode?
A dollar is probably about 4 or 5 commercials.
That's nothing.
Yeah.
That's are they standard like 30-second commercials or are they longer?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So less than 5 minutes.
And I had, but the thing I ran into is, if you're buying them from the Amazon, they have their own store and you can buy anything from them, but they limit your Amazon purchases to 4 a week.
Hmm.
Because they said that they didn't at first. And that was all anybody did, and it killed their bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
So they said that they changed it so that you can only buy a few episodes at a time. So what I've been doing is I buy a few episodes, and then I turn on my PlayStation 3, go to Amazon, and watch the episodes on my own TV.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a really neat substitute for cord cutters. So yeah, I throw that out there.
That's an awesome model. Where? How did you hear about that?
It was on It was a website I go to find stuff that's streaming, had it as a recommendation as a place I could find episodes of stuff. Hmm. And I was like, I don't know if I want to try this. There's always some kind of weird thing. And then I just decided, well, I really want to watch this show. I'll try it. And bam, I've been using it I watch commercials about once a week. It maybe takes me about 20 minutes to watch a bunch of commercials. And then I buy like 4 episodes of a show. And that's my evening for like a Friday night.
Interesting. And they have apps, I guess, coming.
Yeah, there's a phone app, so you can watch the commercials on your phone. Mm. And then when you come home, you can make your purchases.
It's on Windows, Mac, and Android with iOS coming soon, is what the website says.
Ah.
Are you an Android user? You must be.
I am an Android user.
Yeah. Well, I shouldn't say must. I mean, I guess they don't say Windows Phone here. So Windows Desktop, Mac Desktop, and then Android, and then iOS says it's coming soon as far as being able to watch the commercials. That is a really interesting idea. Like, it reminds me, I mean, it's a separate thing, but it reminds me of the app that was the companion to Black Flag, Assassin's Creed Black Flag, where you could, you know, if you had the time or you're at the doctor's office or whatever, as long as you had an internet connection on your app, you could send your fleet out to run these shipping missions and earn in-game gold while you weren't in front of the Xbox. And then when you got back to the Xbox, that gold would be synced to your account and then you could, you know, update your ship and do those kind of things while you're like in game during the time that you spent, you know, piddling around on the iPad app.
So you could play the game when you weren't playing the game.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really,
I love stuff like that.
It was an interesting idea and it made a lot of sense. And it, I mean, it tied right in with the game. It was part of the game anyway. Like you can totally do that in game while you're on missions. You can send ships out and do that kind of stuff, but you get sucked into the game. It's hard to remember that, you know, 3 minutes ago your ship came in and if you are really on the ball, you should be able to send it back out again, you know?
Right.
So yeah, it's one of those things that, that is really appealing, like using this monotonous time that so many people out there have, you know, like that time on the train on your way to work, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, the other thing that I've found really great about the service is I was using Redbox a lot and I have a tendency to forget to return the movie and my bill was running me like $10 every rental. And I was like, I need to stop doing this. And a bunch of new movies are listed on their service as available through Amazon. So I've been able to rent them on Amazon with their service. And I didn't pay anything. Like last weekend, my wife and I had like a date night. And we rented Thor, the second one.
Oh, nice.
And it was like, oh, yeah, I rented it on Amazon. And we watched it and had dinner. And it was like, oh, wait, why were we going to Redbox again?
Nice.
But nice. That's been the experience, and this show is really good.
That was my next question. So now that we know about the service, like, how's the show?
The show is fantastic. I'm a huge fan of. Every time I come on here, I feel like I talk about a new mystery TV show. I'm a mystery junkie, and I love finding heroes that are broken, and that's what this whole show is about. Eric McCormick plays a neuroscience professor in Chicago named Daniel Pierce, and his little secret is he's schizophrenic.
Hmm.
So he's brought on cases by the FBI where they think that there's something wrong with the person they're chasing, or they can't catch somebody, and they're looking for clues, and he's kind of eccentric, so they bring him in to consult. And what they don't know is when they're not in the room, he's talking to imaginary people who are helping him solve the puzzles that help them catch people. And as the first season goes on, you're like, they can't keep this up, because eventually they're going to see him talking to himself, and the jig's going to be up. And that's kind of the direction the first season goes, is people start to question him. And it's a really interesting take on schizophrenia.
Yeah, and do they fill you in? Because, I mean, like, I'm embarrassed to say, like, I don't really know a lot about different mental illnesses, and a lot of times in Hollywood, there's a lot of criticism of it being misrepresented or often used as a villain trope.
I don't know a whole lot about schizophrenia, but I know a lot of stuff about other psychological disorders, and from what I can tell, it's pretty accurate, as in some of his issues, and he talks to imaginary people that are there, and they're usually all put, because he's a neuroscientist, he understands what's wrong with him, so he'll be talking to the imaginary person and be like, I know you're not really here, and I know that you're such and such a thing that's caused by me, and that you're really me talking to myself, so you know what I know. And, like, it's really weird, but it's really interesting at the same time.
Nice. I feel like I might have misspoke too. I feel like there's some shows where the person, like, there's always like a mathematician or, you know, like some other kind of like super genius that's helping to solve the crimes. But socially, they're usually like very, I don't want to say stunted, but odd.
Yes.
You know, as a way to make them an interesting character.
Right. And he suffers from that a little bit, but he's also more interesting than regular people, like in the show. Like, you want to know why he is the way he is and things like that. It really reminded me of the Fox show House with Hugh Laurie.
Ooh, I like House a lot.
Yeah, it reminds me a lot of that, except he's sort of the Hugh Laurie character.
Mm.
He's damaged in some way, and you want to know more about him rather than the puzzles he's solving.
Is he, because he's this neuroscience, like, super smart guy, like, is he harsh? Like, is he a nice guy?
He's a really nice guy.
Okay.
Except he has a intern that follows him around because he gets himself into trouble talking to imaginary people. And so the kid has to make sure he's taking his pills and stuff.
Right.
And so he's mean to that kid. But but everybody else he's really nice to.
It's interesting.
And one of the great parts of the show is LeVar Burton plays his boss at the college he teaches at.
Oh, cool.
And so it's like every other week, LeVar Burton shows up and there's some kind of subplot with him. And I'm like, man, I haven't seen him in TV forever. So
it's been
a long
time, yeah.
So it's really nice to see him getting work again.
Yeah, for sure. I miss shows like House because he was able to say things to people that you wish that you could in real life.
Yes.
You know, like, it seems like in some walks of life these days, one, myself or a friend of mine or other people in my life are just surrounded by stupidity.
Yes.
And you can't always, you know, speak exactly what you have in your head, you know, as far as, you know, addressing that stupidity. But House always can. And it always feels so good to have someone say it. You're just watching House like, yes! you feel like you have to send that episode to person X in your life that is doing stupid stuff. He's like, you need to watch this. You probably won't even clue in, but you just need to watch this to make me feel better.
Speaking of House, not to sidetrack a little bit, but if listeners out there liked House as a TV show, Netflix just added all 8 seasons yesterday.
Oh, cool.
At least here in the U.S. I hope in Canada they did the same
thing. I had the same problem with a conversation with Bill Meeks earlier this week when he said, hey, Young Justice is on Netflix, woohoo! And it's like, yeah, there's no freaking way that's on Netflix Canada. Like,
probably
high hopes. I've got Justice League Unlimited, which is not bad, but I mean, Young Justice is way better, and I would love...
Is it? I have not seen that yet.
The thing about Young Justice, it's like, there seems to be this trend in youth cartoons. So not cartoons for kids, but like this aimed at 10 to 14 year old sort of thing. And they you have to stick with them because they're very episodic at first. And they're kind of like, you know, plot of the week. But after that, they start introducing these season-long story arcs.
Yeah.
And that's what happens with Young Justice. Like, the first season is good. But the second season, they, like, fast forward in time. There's been some off-camera, like, relationships and breakups within the team. And, like, I mean, it sounds like a little bit of teen drama, but it really adds an interesting kind of dynamic to this superhero squad where you're like, wait a minute, what happened to Aqualad? Like, why are all these people here? And then you come back and like, oh God, he's a bad guy now? Like, what happened? And it's a deep plot. Like, they're not condescending. They don't smack you over the head every week with exactly what's going to happen next. It's really, really well done. And it's animated by the Warner Brothers guys, you know, so combination of a you know, overseas team and storyboarding in the US, and it's just, oh my God, it's a beautiful show. I mean, it's as good looking as the Batman animated series from the 90s and a lot of the DVDs that they've been releasing lately. It's such a good cartoon.
I know it's getting added to my Netflix account later.
Yeah. Oh, you'd love it, man. It's such a good time. And there's always like little cameos from like, you know, Batman or Martian Manhunter, because Robin or Miss Martian or like some of their proteges are in it as the Young Justice team, because
right.
They're training the new people to kind of be up and coming in the show.
Right.
Yeah. No, it's not available in Canada. I looked for it. So, and I mean, I like Justice League Unlimited, but everybody's drawn the same. It's kind of a very factory.
Yes.
Kind of designed.
And the episodes
show.
Of the show I always like are the show episodes that nobody else likes. So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That tends to be my problem. Yeah. I always like characters that nobody else cares about.
Yeah, for me, it's I'm a big Superman fan, and they don't spend enough time with the key heroes in Justice League Unlimited.
Right, and you know? The second season they spend more time with them than they do the side characters.
Yeah, but like I don't care about Red Tornado. Like I don't.
No.
You know, like I don't. There's a lot of like. I mean, the Justice League Unlimited cast is enormous, and I just I like. If I'm watching the show and they go, hey, it's, you know, like Super Duper Guy. And I'm like, who? Like, I don't want to watch a whole episode about this guy that I've never heard of. Like there was Hawk and Dove was one of the episodes that I watched with Jocelyn.
Yep.
And she looked at me like, Hawk and Dove? Really? I'm just like, yep. It's welcome to like every character from the 80s made to, you know, brought to life in animated form.
When it first showed up on Netflix, I was watching it. My wife started tuning in on it with me. And then she was like, yeah, I don't know who any of these people are. I'm not interested anymore. I was like, yeah, I understand.
Yeah. I mean, I remember liking Justice League. There's some other direct-to-DVD stuff that I really enjoy because it's got, you know, like your core five, you know, like, you know, Superman,
yes.
Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and Martian Manhunter. You know, and like those are the kind of dynamics I really enjoy. And I hope they do more. I every once in a while I look up on Wikipedia, like what's the coming direct-to-DVD release, because I don't watch television, so I don't see the commercials for these things.
Yeah.
So I every once in a while I have to kind of brush up and say, ooh, you know, like there's a new Batman DVD coming out in like a couple months, or kind of mark it on the calendar so I can go look for it later. Because I really like those direct-to-DVD features. They're so well done.
They all are. And I think one might have, here in the U.S., might have just been added to Netflix. But I don't know. Something showed up in my Netflix queue the other day that I was like, huh. Oh, wait. I need to add that just in case. But I can't remember what it was.
Nice. Yeah, no, I wish more would come to Canada on Netflix. I mean, it is literally the only thing that Jocelyn and I watch. Like, our movie rentals have gone through the floor. Our trips to the theater have dwindled. Like, we have been, I mean, I've mentioned this on the show, so I won't go into too much detail, but we are now into season 3 of Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And talk about a show that, I mean, like, some of the animation is a little bit sketchy because it's a 3D show produced for TV, so, I mean, they've got to cut the corners somewhere.
Right.
But the design and the characters and the, just the Star Wars-esque, you know, of the whole show is just so appealing. It's so well done, and it's fun. It's adult. Like, people are dying, and
oh,
it's,
yeah,
you know.
I will say, speaking of Star Wars and the Clone Wars, I recently started watching it too, and I think I am at about season 3 as well. And maybe 2 weekends ago, my wife was in the kitchen, and I just started watching it, and she was like, "Really? that's what you're going to watch. And then maybe 10 minutes into the episode, she was watching it with me and was like, oh, this is really good. And I was like, yes, yes, it is.
Do you look at her and be like, victory? I win. I was right. I do that all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I like, because Jocelyn has been new to Star Wars. So that, I mean, that's what I'm going to talk about as far as Star Wars this week. Because like I said, we talked about Clone Wars before. Return of the Jedi on Blu-ray was the final installment in the machete order that Jocelyn and I have watched the Star Wars saga in. And so she finally got through the last movie. And boy, oh boy, does she like the Ewoks a lot.
Everybody does the first time.
Now, I've never disliked them, and I still like them. I still enjoy Return of the Jedi. It is still my favorite of the series. And what I find so funny is that I grew up liking Luke Skywalker. Like, that was, he was the hero of the tale. Like, that's just, you know, he was kind of like my alpha sort of
right.
character for the series.
He's designed so as a kid, you identify with him.
Right.
And you want to be him because he's the Jedi.
Yeah. Jocelyn can't stand him. Every time that Mark Hamill's on screen, the first thing on the remote is, man, he's an unattractive man. And I'm just like, well, okay, in his defense, he was in a car accident like right before they filmed this movie. And in Jabba's palace, the lighting is really harsh. Like, they're not trying to be flattering to anybody. And then later on, there's a scene in the Ewok tree village with him and Leia. And she just looks at me like, nope, still ugly. I'm just like, oh, the poor guy can't win. But it's funny to see the different things that she found appealing and unappealing about Return of the Jedi. Even she picked up on the Vader no scream that they inserted over what was the pinnacle scene of Vader killing the Emperor in the throne room on the Death Star, which drives me crazy. Like, I mean, I can take or leave the big Frankenstein scream in episode 3, but the one in episode
6... See, I haven't seen it since they added that.
It's so frustrating, man. Like, it just... It really... I mean, I'm not such a... you know, snotty geek that every last little change they make to Star Wars ruffles my feathers. Some stuff I actually like, you know, like I don't actually mind the blinking on the Ewoks anymore. It doesn't really stand out to me as much. But the Vader stuff just drives me crazy. And I think it's because I'm such an audiophile when it comes to character voicing. Right. And even if they did get James Earl Jones to do it, it doesn't sound the same. Like it doesn't.
No, because he's older.
And but even if they modulated it, like it doesn't sound. It sounds like it's just made in 2003, and not made in 1984. Like it's unfortunate that they put that in there. I feel like it really takes away from that scene. It's my only really big complaint about Return of the Jedi. Everything else is fine. I don't mind the rest of the stuff. And I feel like that's probably one of the movies that they did the least too.
I think it was.
You know?
I think it was, because I remember when they redid the original A New Hope, and they added tons of stuff, including the Jabba threatens Han stuff back in the early 2000s, and that stuff was all neat, but I remember seeing Return of the Jedi in theaters when they re-released it and going, yeah, this is what I remember. What did they do again?
Yeah, I think what happened in Return of the Jedi is that the space battle probably got a couple of really quick, you know, flybys and a couple of things they just couldn't do right.
Yeah.
But it does what those updates should do, is that it accents and it enhances what was already a very good film.
Right.
You know, like Jocelyn and I always had a good laugh over, I don't remember the guy's name, which is bad geekdom. On my part. But the guy that is the co-pilot for Lando.
With Lando?
Yeah.
The
guy that laughs all the time.
I used to know his name.
Yeah, the guy that's always going...
like, yeah, it's like something Snubs or something yeah. like that.
Whenever he was on screen, Jocelyn lost her shit. It was great. It was really fun to watch these with somebody that's never seen them or hasn't seen them very much. Like, she's only ever watched them once before. So it was really enjoyable to watch it through. We did have some issues again with the sound mix, though, on the Blu-ray. And it was the... that weird kind of like there's too much treble and there's too much center channel, and yep. I had to mess with it a little bit to fix it, which is unfortunate because it was during like the Jabba throne room scenes, which are just such iconic things for me. So it, you know, like I was kind of cheesed off that I had to kind of mess around with the audio and interrupt all that kind of stuff. But I know the only thing I feel like I remember differently was I thought the throne room battle at the end on the Death Star was longer. I feel like that lightsaber battle was over really fast this time around.
You know, I think that has to do with the last time I saw it. Well, the first few times I saw it, I was a kid. And I remember the lightsaber battles always being longer. And then when I was older and stuff, I watched them and went, wait, this was over in 2 minutes. I thought I remembered, like, a lot more combat, and it's not as combat driven as like the remakes. The new ones.
No, the new ones are just like, you know, sword fight for the next 20 minutes. And just like, what? Cool. I mean, which is fine because I mean, I remember going into, you know, Revenge of the Sith in theaters. And I remember kind of leaning forward in my chair when Yoda drew his lightsaber. Sorry, that was Attack of the Clones. But you know, like, and leaning forward in my chair when Anakin and Obi-Wan were going to have their battle on Mustafar, because everybody that was a real Star Wars nerd knew that's where he becomes Vader. Like, this is the sword fight that changes everything. So when that started happening, you're just like, oh my God, like, this is, there's still 20 minutes left in this movie. Like, this is going to be epic. And it was, you know, it was fantastic, you know, and I even Jocelyn picked up on the different type of sword play. Like, there's so much spinning and whooshing and stuff in both the Clone Wars cartoon and the prequels compared to the two-handed broadsword sort of style that's happening in Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. And I prefer the Return of the Jedi stuff.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you.
You know, like, I feel like there's some stuff that's cool in the prequels, but there's just some sort of weight and power to, you know, the two-handed approach, you know, as if you're swinging a broadsword, that I feel brings more, I guess more weight to the lightsaber, which is silly because it's a light sword, but you know, like it feels like more of an aggressive weapon.
I can see that.
You know,
the new ones always make the lightsaber feel like it's just, oh yeah, I can do anything with this. It's light as a feather.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the old ones, part of it was there was actually a dowel in that, so it was actually weighted. But, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Some feedback from the chat room, too. I mean, like, Jack is chiming in and saying that, you know, he agrees that the Vader scene was about the introspection of Vader, not, you know, him saying stuff out loud. And Michael O'Day is letting us know his favorite fight is the Yoda fight and Palpatine in Revenge of the Sith. And I don't know why I forgot about that right now, but that's a good point.
That is
like,
a great scene.
That is a great fight. Like that certainly is less, it's less twirly as far as, you know, fancy lightsaber work. I mean, Yoda twirls, but he kind of has to. But it's more somersaults than it is like fancy wrist, you know, twirling of the lightsaber. And then Sidious has a completely different style as well. Like it's all, the point is just always towards the other guy. Like it's all down. Everything's very dagger-like, I guess, if there's a different way to talk about it. I mean, and that's something that I think comes through. Jocelyn and I were mentioning this last night when we were watching Clone Wars, is that Grievous is a much better character in Clone Wars, but the sword fights in Clone Wars are really, really cool because they have that way of animating them with it. It's just pose to pose, right? So they figured, okay, here are the different, you know, attacks and blocks and you know, conflicts that have to happen in the sword fight. And then they just kind of quickly animate between them. And it's amazing. It's like watching Superman sword fight. Like, it's such a cool thing. And then with Grievous having like sometimes four lightsabers at once, like it's such a fun time to be a Star Wars fan with all of the stuff kind of at your fingertips.
Yes, it is. I have to say, with the Clone Wars, the thing that I really enjoyed is when I watched the original first movies when they first got released, like 1, 2, and 3, I didn't care about Grievous. I was like, yeah, he's this robot bad guy that fights with lightsabers. I don't care. But as I've watched the Clone Wars series, you're like, oh, wait, this guy actually has a backstory. He actually, and I didn't have to read a book to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
This is really interesting now.
Yeah, no, and I think that it's funny because he's a good cartoon villain. He's a bad film villain.
Yes.
And I think that's probably the main difference is that he's cool in concept. When you say, hey, let's do a cyborg guy that's basically just, you know, eyeballs, a brain and a heart and turn him into a cyborg and put him in a film. It sounds good at first, but then once you get into it, you're like, yeah, not really. But in the show, he's like the Shredder
yes,
of the Star Wars universe right now. And I'm really digging that. I was trying to think about what else that's been popping into my head as I've been watching the Star Wars stuff. I mean, Return of the Jedi on Blu-ray, at the end of the day, it's still like the trifecta of Star Wars with the space battle, the land battle, and the lightsaber battle all at the same time. Jocelyn really liked the films. We really enjoyed the Machete Order, having seen it all through now. She also likes having some backstory. She feels like watching, episodes 4, 5, and 6 mean a lot more to her, having seen seasons 1, 2 and part of 3 of Clone Wars.
Yeah.
You know, you really get a much better feeling, a more rounded view of Vader as a character. And, I really feel like you start to feel sad for Vader. Like it really, it's not a happy tale, you know?
No.
And it really, I was skeptical, like having seen Star Wars so many times, watching them in a different order, thinking like, this isn't going to change anything. And it does. It really just gives a little bit of a nod, you know, in the right kind of pacing for the story. The biggest shock, in the Machete Order though, is going from episode 5 to episode 2. It's just, there's such different film styles.
Yeah.
That it's like, you know, 1 minute you're watching a film for adults and the next 1 minute you're watching a film for 14-year-olds and you're just like, oh God. Like it's such a change in filmmaking style that it's hard to get underneath, I guess. But yeah, that's it for my Star Wars talk, I guess. The other big news this week for me has been a long-awaited documentary from Dave Kellett and Fred Schroeder, and this is called Stripped. And you can find it at strippedfilm.com. Be careful when you Google that, because you may end up some places that are not safe for work. But Stripped Film, or Google, you know, Stripped Dave Kellett, and you'll find the right one. It's basically a documentary that is chronicling comic strips, as most of the people today would know them. You know, a lot of us grew up reading the Sunday Funnies. Some of us have you know, turned into professional cartoonists that make comic strips, like myself, and, you know, have been just steeped in this kind of world for so long. It was a Kickstarter project 1.5 years ago, and I was one of the backers, one of the many backers. They had quite a few, and they've been able to interview a ton of really cool artists, including Jim Davis, Kathy Guys-White, Bill Amend, Patrick McDonald, Scott McCloud, Greg Evans, and many, many more. They're all listed on the website. The film is now available on iTunes for $14.99, which is a steal, or to rent for $5, which is a no-brainer. There's additional interviews that just went up on the website today, and that includes the deluxe edition of the film for $50. And that is like 16 hours of footage.
Oh my God.
All the comic geeks out there, you know, with as many web comics as there are, and all the people that are just nerding out about comics today, they just demanded that they release the special features and the behind the scenes and all that kind of stuff. So if you happen to be a Kickstarter backer and already own the movie like I do, I was speaking with Fred Schroeder on Twitter earlier, and I was teasing him about being an evil genius, and he's like, now I'm going to buy your movie twice in a year, which I would have been happy to do, because $50 for 16 hours of interview content with these people is just, it's still, you know, so reasonable.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but they actually have an extras only package for $34.99, so that means that, you know, I already own the film, I don't need to rebuy the film. I'll get the, you know, DVD commentary, the 16 hours of extra footage, like all this kind of stuff for like $35. And that would be my only, it's not a complaint. It's just an unexpected criticism about the film is that if you like comics from the outside of the comic world, if you're a young comic artist and you don't know much about the history of comic strips, it is a awesome film for you. For me, it was a nice love letter to a world that I am already in love with. So while it was interesting and had a lot of great moments, including something that I haven't mentioned yet, it's also not exactly news for about 80% of the movie. Like, a lot of it I knew. Now some of it I didn't. And some of the opinions and stuff from the people that are in the film and interviewed, I didn't know. But, you know, you start to geek out in your head as a supporter of the Kickstarter movie and for myself as a cartoonist. It's like, oh my God, they interviewed Jim Davis. They interviewed, you know, Bill Ayman. They interviewed Bill Watterson, who hasn't said anything to anybody about comics publicly in like 20 years. And Dave Kellett was actually able to talk to Bill on the phone. There's some gems of dialogue of Bill Watterson talking about comics, comic strips, what it means for newspapers, what it meant to him, while you're watching, like, you know, images of Calvin and Hobbes cycle by on the screen. Like, it is beautiful, you know? So all of those things are fantastic, but there's this little bit of a danger if you're a comic artist that's already steeped in this world of being, I don't want to say disappointed, but being a little underwhelmed from all the hype. Mm-hmm. And I can only kind of justify it like by saying, like, Dave and Fred were probably very quickly made aware of the fact that they have got, you know, several hours of interview footage with some of the most successful and creative cartoonists on the planet, and they have to fit it into an hour and a half, which basically means you get about 5 minutes from everybody. So all these, like, really in-depth stories, you're just not gonna get from just the film. So if you're looking at, you know, wanting to know the behind the scenes of Jim Davis's, you know, Garfield story, if you want to know a lot more about Kathy Geiswhite and her story, I would suggest going to strippedfilm.com and either pick up the deluxe edition for everything, or you can actually download the interviews a la carte. So if you are just a big Jim Davis fan and you just want to watch the hour and 20 minute interview with Jim Davis for $2.99, no problem. You know, so it's a really interesting way of providing that content to people today, where most documentaries, I don't know of another documentary that says, oh yeah, hey, cool, here's all of our footage that we knew didn't make the film.
I have a few friends that are huge Calvin and Hobbes fans, and I have to point them in the direction of this.
It's really well done. I mean, and again, like, I don't want to sound like I'm poo-pooing it by having this one little caveat with it. I mean, it was an amazing afternoon on my lunch hour on April 1st to just, you know, grab a beer, you know, kick back and watch this movie. It's just, you know, it has a lot more weight with me, obviously, than it's going to have with other people, because I mean, I'm a comic artist myself. But yeah, I'm still speechless in a lot of ways to try and convey how it is for artists to watch this film.
I can definitely sympathize with you. There was a Kickstarter for a video game history show that's going to be coming soon called The Outer Lands. And I wanted to Kickstarter back it because I love the guys that do all that stuff. But when they showed some of the preview video stuff, I was like, yeah, but this is stuff I all know about video game history. So am I going to really like this? Or is it going to be me just watching something that I already know all the information they're giving me?
Yeah.
So I sympathize with you when you say it's like 80% of it you knew.
Yeah. It's still totally worth checking out for anybody that's even remotely interested in comic strips. So I feel like my love letter segment on this little cafe to this movie is over. If I keep going, I'm going to just talk forever. So I'll have to move on. But what if anything have you been reading since the last time we've spoken? Anything?
I have not been reading. I've been doing a lot of watching. I've been burning myself out at the office during the day, so coming home, it's like I need to just kind of relax and watch TV.
Nice. Keeping in our Star Wars kick, reread Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader by James Luceno. And it's an abridged audiobook that I own. It's 4 to 5 hours. It's an easy listen. And after watching all of the Star Wars stuff with Clone Wars and everything else, it was fantastic. Like, to get this kind of inside head of Darth Vader and how it all kind of happens in the minutes, you know, after he's, you know, made and becomes Vader in episode 3. It's fantastic. So if you are out there and you want yet another piece of Star Wars entertainment, the audiobook by Dark Lord, The Rise of Darth Vader is fantastic. They've got music and like lightsaber sounds and lasers and stuff behind it. It really sucks you in, and having so much.
A really good job with that in the Star Wars books.
It's so good. So good at like having so much visual information in my head lately about Star Wars. I get sucked right in. Like, they say, oh no, it's an ARC 170, you know, starship or starfighter. It's like, I know what that is. I can picture that flying around in my brain. Like, it's so clear to have that kind of stuff. So I would highly recommend reading that. And plus it's like 4 or 5 hours. It's like super easy. Right on. Well, that brings us to the Internet Minute, which is brought to you by the Tweaked Audio folks. TweakedAudio.com. is a place to go for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. You can use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. There are over 5 or 6 different styles. Mic'd sets are available, compatible with iPods, iPhones, Android devices, etc., and they come with a lifetime warranty. So visit tweakedaudio.com, use our code TCC, and get free shipping and 30% off your entire order. They are good stuff.
Yes, they are, and I have to say, I actually have to go order some new earbuds from them, actually.
Well, there you go, man.
So,
yeah,
this is a nice, friendly reminder.
So, for the picks this week, I'll let you go first, sir.
Okay. My pick this week is actually a video game, a computer game, actually.
Surprise.
Yeah, about two weeks ago, I had a friend of mine email me and was like, hey, did you see such and such a game on Steam? And I was like, no, and I don't have money to spend. And he's like, no. Go look at it. It's free. And I went, now you're speaking my language. And there's a game that just showed up on Steam. It's called Heroine's Quest, Herald of Ragnarok. And it's basically a point-and-click adventure game in the style of the old Sierra adventure games, like Hero's Quest or King's Quest or Space Quest or the Monkey Island games, if you're familiar with the LucasArts stuff. It's in that vein. And it's totally free. And it's part RPG. You wander around a map and you fight goblins and other things. And there's actually a combat mechanic. And then the other part of the game is you solve puzzles, rescue people, figure out your way through a dungeon, things like that. And I have to say, for a free game, I've spent about 25 hours of the in the game, and I am not even halfway yet.
Wow.
There's about 8 chapters in the game, and I'm in chapter 4 or 5.
Very cool.
For a free, I can't believe it's free. It's so good that, like, my friends and I have actually donated. They have a donation page on their website. We've gone and donated money to them because we're just like, you need to make another one of these. This is amazing.
Awesome. Very, very cool. I have to start giving these kind of games a chance because I'm not a big fan of pixel art.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff tends to turn me off. However, I also understand, being a professional artist, that is usually a bottleneck for cost. Because looking at the content, looking at how much time you spend in this game and how much story there is, to have that illustrated at a level that is, you know, kind of out there with, you know, high def graphics and stuff like that would be just incredibly expensive. And, you know, the small indie people that are out there doing this kind of stuff are just not going to be able to do it.
Something I will say about this game is it's made in the vein. There was a series of games done by Sierra called Quest for Glory.
Mm-hmm.
And my first computer game was one of the Quest for Glory games. And so it's sort of like my favorite game of all time. And this game is literally like they made a new one.
Right. So they're hitting
right
you.
down to the graphics, right down to the voice acting, right down to the beginning of the game. You get to pick whether you're a warrior, a wizard, or a thief. And the puzzles revolve around your character class. So the thief will find a way to break in by sneaking in through a window. The wizard might find a way to float over the wall, or the fighter might just kick down the door and fight people. And that's okay, but that's how you solve the puzzle, is by using your class's abilities.
Cool. There's so much stuff out there. It kind of makes me wonder how you find such gems. Because every time you're on, you always share like a really cool free-to-play or really affordable indie game. And it just like, it's crazy to me how much stuff is out there. Like every once in a while, like I'd like to do some development artistically, you know, for video games. So every once in a while, I look to see what's happening in the App Store or in different platforms online on Steam. And there is just so much stuff. And they're all made by a different indie studio with, you know, usually a different artist is already working with them. So like it's really kind of a moot point for me to apply. But man, oh man, like there's just so much stuff out there. So what's your favorite venue for finding new games like this? Like how do you find you get a lot of misses? Like, I mean, for all the indie games that you try, do you find like there's a lot of duds, or do you have like a secret resource?
There is a lot of duds. The biggest way I find indie games is there are several not Humble Bundles, but bundle packages that are all indie game related. There's a website called The Royal Bundle, and they're affiliated with Desura, which is like an indie Steam. It's all indie games, but it's a Steam-like. And they're affiliated with them. And then there's another group called Groupies, and they do bundles that are also have indie music tied with them, but then they do indie games packages as well. And then there's another one somewhere else. There's about five of them I follow. And whenever they do a package, it's usually like $5 and you get 20 games. And I'll buy them, and for out of the 20 games, I'll find two I like. But for $5, I only spent $2 on those games. You know what I mean? So it's worth it. But it's really hard to find good indie stuff. So when something free comes along, it's like, it's free.
No risk. Yes. Yeah, I mean, like, I got a game from Ryan for Christmas, and I don't even remember what it's called, but it's an indie puzzler. It's similar to Portal.
Yeah,
like you make a clone of yourself, and then you have to solve puzzles. And it was cool when I tried it, and I probably played it for a good hour. Like, you know, it's one of those addicting puzzle type things.
Yep.
It's the kind of thing, but it's the kind of thing you normally play on your phone or your iPad. And I liked it, and I appreciated the gift, and I feel bad because I've never opened it again.
You're talking to someone who has almost 400 games on Steam now. And like another 100 games on Desura, like 20 games on Origin. I have so many games, it's crazy. And that's not even including my back catalog of old console stuff I have in my office. And some of it is stuff I bought 10 years ago and I never took out of the package because I never got around to playing it.
Wow.
I have so many games, my wife looks at me and goes, "Did you buy another one this week? Oh my God, you haven't played the five you bought last week." And I'm like, "I know, but it was on sale for $2.
Well, I mean, you're paying $2, you're supporting an indie developer, and it's less than a cup of coffee. So
yeah, exactly. That's kind of the way I look at it.
That's different. You know, like when Jocelyn and I are looking at budgets, you know, for her, she wants to buy a new release title, which is like $60. For me, I'm looking at, a new MMO or something like that. And that's the price of the game plus the monthly subscription.
Yep.
Something that she's also dealing with as well with ESO, Elder Scrolls Online for the people that aren't in the know. And then for me, it's also like art books, like, you know, or for example, like this $35 purchase for these extra interviews. Now, I mean, like that is related to my profession and it's really a no-brainer. It's a very kind of easy value, but therein lies the digital conundrum these days, where it's just like, it is, that is a, it's a high value item at a low cost, but then they start bundling things. Like, I could pay $2.99 for an hour and 20 minutes with Jim Davis. That sounds amazing. Or I could pay $34.99 for an hour with everybody.
Yeah.
And that's great, but that's a lot different than $2.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so then you have to think, okay, well, can I afford the $35? Like, what else was I planning on spending that $35 on this month? You know, so, and that kind of stuff, like, it adds up so fast. And the only time that we don't hesitate is generally when it's supporting, like, independent people. Like, I mean, that's why I've gotten zero thought about, you know, supporting Stripped in any way I can. It's because it was a kickstarted movie by two guys, you know, like, so... That has got, you know, that hits me in the feels because, you know, being an independent artist and an independent creator, like, I want to be able to support others that are doing the same. Whereas when Carbine Studios comes out with Wildstar pre-order, I'm like, I'll wait. Like, if I get into the beta in May, I'll play some more and decide if I want to buy it. Like, I don't need to race out and buy a game from a giant company. So I can see how, you know, you would be buying more indie stuff.
Oh, I definitely have to say I spend way more money on indie stuff than I do AAA stuff. And mostly because I've played all the AAA stuff. The space doesn't really change. It's a lot of... Oh, space. Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of space.
It's really good, but it's the same as the last game that you released last year.
Yeah.
With new stuff.
Yeah.
And then somebody with an indie game comes along and goes, hey, look at this. We're remaking a game that was in the style of something that was made 20 years ago, but we've given it updated graphics and it looks neat. Oh, wait, this is something I haven't played in years or I've never played at all. I'll give you $5.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I like rewarding people for their creativity. I mean, not that there aren't some like AAA titles that I really enjoy. Like, I really like Assassin's Creed. I think it's great. I know it's the fourth version of that game. Now, I haven't played the others. But I really like it. I don't find it too much like the other RPGs, I guess, that I've played.
Did you see the trailer this week for the new one?
No. No, I did not.
When we're done, go look up Assassin's Creed Unity. Mm. There is a trailer it's a teaser trailer for the new game.
Cool.
And all I have to say is French Revolution.
Ooh, fun.
So
interesting. Well, my pick this week is a video that has been making the rounds. I actually had it picked for, I think, the week that I wasn't able to make the show happen. But this is a special effects video put together by the guys at, what's it called here?
Corridor Digital.
Corridor Digital. Thank you. The two words mished together in my link made it hard to read. So
yeah.
Corridor Digital, and they actually have a Patreon page. So if you like their work and you're enjoying their videos, you can go to patreon.com/corridordigital, and help them make some more cool stuff. But basically, this is what they envision as Superman finding a GoPro camera. So they have a GoPro camera, and they at first you're like, yeah, okay, it's a guy in a kind of a bad Superman costume. He sort of looks the part, but it, you know, whatever. It's not going to be all that interesting. Then he puts the camera on and proceeds to return it to the previous owner, which is what Superman would do. But then he's flying all over the city and doing all of this crazy stuff. And then is very quickly realized, oh, wow, this is more than just somebody making a home movie. Some people put some real thought and skill and time into this. And it is awesome. I watched it all the way through with the making of as well, but I did it like a week and a half ago. But they did it all with like a couple of different drones that can fly at certain levels and do certain things. And then they, you know, combined footage with other things that they were doing to create, like, you know, when he saves a person from a burning building, and he basically does Superman stuff all the time. It's so good. And
I'm watching it as you speak, and it's just amazing.
Yeah. Like they do such a good job. It's captures the spirit of Superman, which is the other thing they did really well. It's not just about the special effects in the camera. It's about the whole, like, you know, him saving the day, getting shot at, but also making sure that he, you know, like, pets the dog or says hi to the people in distress. And like, he's like, okay, well, you hang in there. See you later now. And then he takes off and does this kind of hokey Superman thing. And just, it's really, really neat. It makes me want to be able to fly, like all the kind of things that a Superman piece should do. And I really, really enjoyed it. So check out Corridor Digital on YouTube and on patreon.com and see what they're up to. I think it's some really, really cool stuff. Well, that's it, folks. That brings us to the end of yet another episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream, though, is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show is composed by Kevin MacLeod. Of course, the episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. That is also where you can find all of the very cool show notes that Lou and I talked about tonight. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or hit us up on Twitter or Facebook by just the show name. This Friday evening, don't forget to tune into the Gamers Inn. That is at 8:30 p.m. Eastern on amove.tv. If you're a gamer, join Jocelyn and Ryan as they break down their opinions on the latest gaming news and what they've been playing. You can find out more at gamersinpodcast.com as well as amove.tv/TGI. As I mentioned at the top of the show, my name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am up to online at joelduggan.com, including my Patreon page, which is where I am creating comics. So if you'd like to help me make more comics, visit patreon.com/joelduggan and check out some of the rewards and goals that I have set out there. You can also follow me on Twitter at Joel Duggan and on Facebook as Joel Duggan Illustration. Lou, where can people find your work online?
The easiest place to find me is on Twitter. I am at Busy Zombie Lord, and my show is Zombies Ate My Podcast, and we're on Twitter as well at Zombies Podcast.
Nice. Once again, there's a reminder that next week, April 9th, will be the beginning of the Winter is Coming segments on the Citadel Cafe. I am excited for this season of Game of Thrones. I hope you are too. Don't forget to join us for a spoiler-filled episode every week for the next 10 weeks, talking about dragons and murder and all kinds of fun stuff.
I'm excited. Walking Dead ended and something else begins. I feel spoiled.
I think we all do. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two. Nobody emails the Citadel Cafe.
And then when I went to click the auto update, it was like, click here to auto update. And I clicked it and it went, this update must be downloaded manually. I was like, oh, Skype, why are you so weird?
Skype. Oh, brother. This is the fun part of the show where I scramble for the link that I can't find. I might have closed the window. Oh, no. I did. God. So much work, stuff happening all the time. All right. Butt software, you're going to go. This is going to take a lot longer than I thought. I was hoping to be able to kind of like talk and be silly until I found the link, but nope, still looking for the link. Can't find it.